From Italy to the Canadian Rockies and beyond, Gazette Travel makes exploring the world easy and stress-free. See our full lineup of tours at thegazette.com/travel.
Welcome back to another episode of Hawk Off the Press. My name is Madison Nuritic. I am the Iowa Athletics beat reporter at the Gazette. I am handling all of the women's basketball Big Ten tournament coverage for this week, and that all kicks off right now as we welcome in Hawkeye Insider's David Eichel. David, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me. Yeah, you're right. The Big Ten tournament's already off to a crazy start. We were just talking off camera, and Indiana somehow knocks off Nebraska. Nebraska was up 20 with like a minute to go in the second quarter. Indiana ends on a 12-2 run. And I'll tell you what, the Big Ten's deep. The other part is the conference might not be happy because I don't know if the Huskers make the NCAA tournament anymore. But thankfully, Iowa fans can rest easy because I think they're in the NCAA tournament. And that might be a little bit of an understatement.
I feel like they're pretty secure in that number two seed. We were talking about that earlier as to how secure they are, and particularly with the number two seed, more likely than not, but definitely going to be hosting in a couple weeks, which is going to be pretty exciting. But that's a little too far in the future. Let's focus on Indianapolis starting on Friday afternoon. Iowa does not know its opponent yet. They won't find out until tomorrow. But the one thing we do know right now is Hannah Stolke's status is still not necessarily known at this point. You and I were chatting with head coach Jan Jensen earlier today, and she was saying the elbow injury is not looking great. I know we both are kind of unsure if she'll play in that quarterfinals game on Friday, but I'm curious, David, you were at the game when Hannah went down. I'm curious, what have you seen from that, and where can Iowa go with it?
I mean, I saw a lot of adrenaline more than anything else, because it is amazing too, because she took a hard fall, and Hannah's incredibly strong, and she's as tough as can be. I mean, she played the undersized five through her first 3 years of her career, going up against, you know, Camila Cardoso, 6'7", going up against numerous 6'5" posts, battling down there, peak athlete. She went down, grabbed her elbow, was down for probably at least 2 minutes before getting up and being helped to the locker room, but probably more emotional consulting than anything else. Then about 7 minutes later, she trots back out there with a big sleeve on her arm, and she gutted out the win. And looking back now, it's even more impressive that she was able to knock down three of the four free throws that Iowa needed to kind of secure the game, because you look at where her elbow's at now and to be able to get in that spot. And this has been a 4-year storyline for her as far as her consistency from the free throw line. It was amazing toughness. And I think Iowa did the right thing by holding her out against Wisconsin. And, you know, initially I didn't think it was that big a deal, but you're right. Jan does seem, I would say, pretty worried right now about where to kind of go from here. She talked about how it wasn't so much pain tolerance, because I think if it was just pain tolerance, Hannah would gut it out. But she talked about how much it swelled up that next day and how it really hasn't gone down. She talked about the range of motion probably concerns me more than the swelling. Obviously, swelling is one thing. It's difficult. But things are not looking great, in my opinion, for her hopes to play Friday. And depending on how bad it is once they get there, I still don't think it would be the worst idea in the world to rest her completely, Maddie. I know people probably don't want to hear that, but I don't know how much Iowa can gain outside. Yeah, winning a Big Ten tournament would be great. They'd probably love another shot at UCLA, because I assume UCLA is going to roll through. But Hannah Stolke's final kind of little stretch of her college career, you look at the way this team's set up, you look at the potential to get in that second weekend. I'm very curious what happens on Friday and if she plays, but I got to tell you, I'm only giving her maybe a 20 to 25% chance that she plays.
Based off of the conversation and what Jan was saying earlier this morning, I'm not necessarily optimistic about Friday. I don't know. I think the hard part is, we really don't know the full extent of the injury. Right. We do know that it is on her dominant side. Jan did say that this morning, and that is a huge factor in recovery time, because if it's your dominant side, you're obviously doing more naturally with that side. So that's a big issue. The thing that got my attention was the range of motion. Like you said, you can fight through pain tolerance. Swelling can go down with some Advil and some ice, but range of motion is a big deal. And so that was kind of the moment where I had said, okay, maybe this is going to be a little bit more of an adjustment for Iowa. However, that is where Journey Houston comes into the picture. She's already made a couple starts in place of Stolke throughout this year. She's played great. I've been a big fan of Journey Houston throughout this season. I think she's developed really, really well. And Jen even said, you know, the fact that they were able to get Houston in throughout the game, throughout the games this season, get her those valuable minutes, get her the opportunity to compete against quality Big Ten talent. That might be a little bit of a bright, of a silver lining in the sense of it's not necessarily you don't know who's going to step in for Hannah.
I think the big thing for me is the first thing I think about Journey, it's maturity and consistency. She does not play like a freshman. Like a lot of times when you get into tournament time, you know, bright lights, extra attention, the stakes are higher. A lot of younger players, you know, tend to freeze up. Journey does not strike me as somebody that's going to freeze up. And I think that's the one thing that Jan's done an excellent job of coaching this young group up, because look, Corey Close had every reason to win Big Ten Coach of the Year. They are spectacular. They are one of the top two teams in the country for what my opinion's worth. I don't know how many coaches could get 24 wins with who Iowa has at this point in time. 9 of their 13 players are freshmen and sophomores. Taylor McCabe is out for the rest of the season, and Iowa had to make an adjustment after she got injured. Obviously, Kylie Fearbach's been great defensively. Hannah Stolke, you know, again, we'll see what happens with her, but this is a very young team. And Jan's approach to pressure is a privilege, basically, probably since the recruiting process for a lot of these women, Maddie, because let's face it and call a spade a spade. You've been here now for this entire basketball season. You've watched it. It's very evident. Playing women's basketball at Iowa is unlike anywhere else in the country.
No, there it definitely is.
There's more exposure. I don't want to say more pressure, but there's more excitement and there's more eyes on you. And these women have leaned into it. Mm-hmm. Journey Houston leans into it, but doesn't let it consume her. She's a very high IQ basketball player who is incredibly self-aware of what her team needs out of her. She's an undersized 4, 5'10". She rebounds the ball tremendously. I love her little elbow jumper. She passes the ball well. She's a gritty defender. So again, if Hannah can't go, it's going to be extremely unfortunate. But when you have somebody like Journey Houston that can step in and maybe give you 8 rebounds and 8 points, or, you know, maybe 12 points and 4 rebounds, that's a big deal. Another aspect of this, how about Tegan Mullaney? No better time for her to have her breakout game and get her confidence up than ahead of the Big Ten tournament than her homecoming. 10 points, 4 rebounds. I think she had 2 assists and 2 steals as well. And that was, I think, more points than she'd had her entire Big Ten season. But that's somebody who Jan says, you know, we've seen flashes, but she got sick earlier in the year. It'd been a little bit tough of a get back for her. So again, of course you'll take Hannah, but at least Tegan is fresh off her biggest game of her season. And Journey Houston's kind of been that steady, hey coach, you want me to start? Great, I'll do it. You want me to be the 6th woman or the 8th woman coming off the bench? Sure. They are going to produce. On top of that, you have Ava Hayden. That high-low action is just like, let Ava Hayden get positioned. As long as you can feed her the ball, it's going to be 2 points 2 times out of 3 statistically, which is ridiculous to even think about.
And we'll talk a little bit more about Ava here in a moment, but just to kind of give you some numbers and quantify this a little bit, Journey Houston, she's averaged 6 points per game and 4.9 rebounds per game, which for a freshman with 2 starts, 29 games, I mean, she's played every game this year. She's just made those 2 starts. Not bad. I mean, for somebody, yeah, considering the learning curve, especially for somebody who is undersized, and the reality is when you're young and you join a sport, especially in Power 4, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. You have to be able to meet the standards that are required, especially in Big Ten basketball. Oh my goodness. But for her to be able to put up those numbers in her first year, that's a great sign. And we could talk about people who have really kind of risen to the occasion in Ava Hayden. being the only Iowa player to receive the first team All Big Ten selection, which continues Iowa's streak, now 10 straight years with at least one Hawkeye as a member of the first team All Big Ten honorees. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Ava since we started transitioning a little bit into her.
Really quick, Maddie, I don't know if I've ever told you this about Journey Houston, and I think this is a very important point. She was a five-star prospect in her sophomore year. She missed her entire junior year due to a major knee injury, and she kind of dropped down the rankings. And of course, getting Addie Deal was a massive deal, for lack of a better term, right? They got Layla Hayes, and I like Layla's game. But Journey kind of got hidden in there because she was committed as a sophomore and obviously her dropped down the rankings. Like, you talk about somebody that probably deserved more attention from, including myself. This is a self-criticism. And even Iowa fans, it's almost like, okay, she was an in-state girl, dropped down the rankings, we'll see where she's at. It's incredible that she just has ignored the hype and, quite frankly, bounced back from that major knee injury. Because I watched her over the summer a little bit in the open practices. She was good, but you kind of saw the other players and who was ahead of her. For her to buy into a role of a backup four, which Jan admitted she kind of had to talk her into it a little bit, and to shine the way she has, it's probably one of the more under-talked about stories. So I'm happy you brought her up early.
No, I mean, I think that she's somebody that caught my eye pretty quickly. I remember going to the first couple games of the year. I think back to the very first exhibition game that Iowa had way back at the like mid-October, early November timeframe when we were still doing football, if you could think about that. But I do remember seeing Journey and being like, okay, like I like what I'm seeing out of this. And so I think that was always something that stood out to me. But I think just her adjustments and her ability to adapt and have that, like, okay, where do you need me mentality, because having that as a freshman is huge too, and something that any coach will obviously take, but sometimes it's also underrated as well by fans, sometimes just not necessarily knowing how important it is to have somebody who can say, oh, I'll do this, yeah, sure, you want me to go against, you know, somebody 6'3" who is averaging 20 points a game, sure, why not, let's do it. Like, you need somebody like that, and Journey has clearly been one of the many players on this team who have been willing to take this challenge. But we'll switch over a little bit here to Ava Hayden, who's kind of been the star of this, especially in the latter half of this season for this women's basketball team. I mean, I feel like you and I talk about this all the time, but what more can we even say about Ava at this point in her journey and her transition from, you know, off the bench to starting and first team Big Ten honors?
It's rare to have somebody have a modest freshman year. It was solid. Like, Jan talks about all the time how difficult it is for post players to go from high school to college, because let's face it, in high school women's basketball, if you're 6'4", you probably should be dominating whoever you're playing for the most part, right? Ava had a decent freshman year. Back half of the year, the NCAA tournament, she really pieced it together. But right when she pieced it together, everyone said, okay, this is going to be a breakout player in the Big Ten. It became glaringly obvious it was going to happen. To have her not only live up to that expectation, but to rise above those expectations, it really is incredible. And I've said this for probably the past couple of weeks, and I don't mean to throw pressure on her, but this is the type of ceiling I see out of her. She's going to be a preseason All-American next season. If they don't, they don't watch basketball. Quite frankly, I think she should be a third-team All-American this year. 17.6 points, by the way, is more points than she averaged her senior year of high school. She only averaged 17 a game in high school. 65% from the field. And remember, she's shooting mid-range jumpers now. And she has, like, the most awkward, clean-looking game I've ever seen. Like, obviously, it's been put to memory what she does, but it looks a little awkward at times. But you can tell this is how she's practiced it, and she's very comfortable, and she excels at it. 6'4 women should not be able to move the way she does running rim to rim. Like, she's so incredible at with those soft hands, catching the pass and laying it up. It feels like she's under the hoop more than half the time when she catches the ball in transition, and she still puts it in effortlessly. When you look at her ceiling, by the way, she's actually stayed out of foul trouble lately. that's been a big, big reason why she's really broken out here over the past, I would say, month and a half or so. I seriously think that when it's all said and done, she could potentially be the third best player to ever play at Iowa. Like,
it's interesting that you say that. I mean, because I think the thing that jump stood that out
she's
to me
made is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's what stood out to me too, is that jump and the fact that it's, you look at it and you're like, okay, usually you see these kinds of numbers from a senior or a graduate player, but the fact that she's a sophomore and she's still got two more years, that's the thing that I've stood out, like that has stood out with me. And again, it goes back to how young this team is when you think about it that way.
Yep.
Like you think about it and you're like, oh yeah, she's a sophomore this year. It's so interesting to see how much there is still available for Iowa to use. Another bit of her stats that I love are just her defensive stats: 36 steals, 32 blocks. Like, again, not normal numbers for a sophomore, particularly blocks. 32 blocks. Hannah and Layla are the other two players in that have 10 blocks, and then Stremlo has 11 this year.
It feels like, well, I think Chit Chat has 4, and I think that's the best stat on the team.
I believe, Chit-Chat, yes, I believe, like, you're, yeah, correct. She's got, yes,
like little 5'4 Chit Chat. It has 4 blocks, and it's incredible. For Ava, again, it's just the two-way potential. Like,
yes,
her game is so tailor-made to the WNBA that I will tell you right now, she will be a first-round pick in 2 years. With her athleticism, well, assuming the WNBA has a season, but that's a topic for another podcast.
Correct.
Ava not only doing this at this point in time, it's knowing that she's the number one option on this team. And usually they kind of fall off once defenses start tailoring it toward Ava. You know when she really started to get on this tear? Was right when Taylor McCabe went down.
Yeah,
and
you're
the
right.
Difference between that also is when Taylor McCabe went down, yeah, Iowa suffered through that little losing stretch. But a big reason for that was teams were not so perimeter-oriented anymore. Iowa ran a lot of high-low action. Teams were packing the paint. So Ava was still doing this despite being double-teamed in these awkward situations. So, again, she hasn't slipped. So even next year, by the way, you know, we'll see what happens with transfers and everything else, but Iowa's probably going to be one of the youngest teams in the Big Ten again next season. Ava Hyen's going to be going into her third year. I don't think there's any slowing her down. Like, if she averages 21 and 9 next season, it's not going to surprise me. And I hate giving her that sort of pressure, but you have to give her the ball almost every single possession. It's incredible what she's done from it. You just go 12 months time span from like 12 months ago today versus now. That's as crazy of a growth as I've seen in probably since Megan Gustafson herself, maybe Monica Sinano. But it goes back to this, Maddie. Jan Jensen is the post whisperer, and Randy Henderson's done a great job at coaching those posts with Jan moving to that head coaching role.
It's so interesting to see how Jan's been able to take on the head coaching role, especially after being an assistant at the program as long as she has. But I do think this is where the tournament is going to be so interesting, is that with how young this team is and how good they've been ever since really that 3-game skid that they had, this is going to be the first time a lot of them are experiencing a college postseason tournament, especially with the ability to make a deep run in a college postseason tournament. So it's kind of brings it a little bit more to a bigger picture question here for you, David. But when you look at this Big Ten tournament, obviously the hope and I guess maybe I don't want to say expectation because I feel like we're using that word a lot and it feels like UCLA is on a tear, but it feels like this tournament is almost building up to an Iowa UCLA rematch when you look at the bracket on paper. But I'm curious, what about this youth could maybe be an advantage or a disadvantage for this Iowa team when they play in Indy this weekend?
Iowa's played in front of a sold-out crowd nearly every game it's played in. They're just not going to be intimidated by the crowd that's there. And I do think if there's – obviously Iowa fans, I think, travel for multiple sports, but it's been very proven. Even the casual women's basketball fan, doesn't it seem like they kind of gravitate toward Iowa? For the most part, like, I hear countless stories about, like, people live in California, maybe on the West Coast. They have no ties to women's basketball. They said, you know, every time I see Iowa women on, I root for them. I go to these games if they're in my area. Like we saw that, for example, when Iowa was down in Florida early this season when they beat Baylor. Like there's just a lot of Iowa women's basketball fans. So I think you combine that. I think you look at the versatility of this team as well. Like Iowa's just not going to go in there intimidated. And I also think if you want to talk about the coaching aspect and how great Jan is, one, I think Jan moving from the assistant head coaching role, the associate head coaching role, the head coach, it's a bigger transition than I think people realize. But for it to be 2 years post Lisa Bluter, Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall, Caitlin Clark, they're already going to be a two seed again in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And the reason behind that
did not take long at all.
They talk about pressure as a, I said earlier, pressure is a privilege. Jan is the ultimate, you listen to Jan talk. Like Jan is an ultimate motivator. She's incredibly positive. You cannot believe in yourself. Every single person cannot believe in you. And the one person that's going to believe in you, it's Jan Jensen. So if you're talking about playing in big games, playing in these environments, doing all these things, Jan knows how to channel a different energy from her teams in these situations. And I think that's something that's going to be evident because, again, I think Corey Close is a Hall of Fame head coach in women's basketball. There's zero question. There are very few coaches I'm taking over Jan Jensen. As far as, look, Iowa, I think it's going to be way more talent, like more talented in 2 years from now. But Jan gets the most out of her talent, and she extracts the best. Another player who we have not mentioned yet, Chit-Chat Wright. I mean, that's yeah. A player who averaged 7 points a game last year. Now, look, playing style, being on the court more has helped her, but her shooting numbers from last year to this year, I'm giving it two things credit. One, obviously, Chit-Chat Wright's work ethic in her transition into Iowa's play style. The other thing, though, I'm giving it to Jan Jensen. Like, she's talked about how she's pulled her aside and said, look, you're one of our best players, our best shooters. We are going to run sets for you. So everybody talked about Chit-Chat Wright being a pass-first point guard. She's pulling that trigger a lot sooner now than she ever has in her career. So I do think Iowa's youth will have a significant advantage because this is a program that expects them to be at this level and expects them to continue to thrive. And ultimately, look, it's going to be a majority of Iowa fans in Indianapolis. And on top of that, another subtle reason we haven't talked about, a lot of Indiana Fever fans are Iowa women's basketball fans. And I think they all know why.
I think that's a very valid point, especially since it's March 4th. And well, we still haven't heard a ton about what's going to happen with the WNBA this season. But as you said earlier, that's for another podcast or another conversation that you and I could delve into for at least another hour. We don't have that kind of time. But I mean, yes, and Chit-Chat Wright is absolutely somebody who has made significant strides this season. She's got 12.4 points per game this year. I do remember sitting in that women's basketball media day press conference with Jan, everyone asking about Chit-Chat. What can you tell us about her? And Jan being like, she is a pass first point guard and we are trying to pull some confidence in her shooting out of her so she can shoot more. And I feel like by December, we all were sitting here like, yeah, we're seeing it. Like we all see it now. And as you said, it's a credit to the coaching style. It's also a credit to Chit-Chat's work ethic. Because I mean, I remember talking to her during media day and she was like, there's not a day I'm not taking shots somewhere. She's like, even if it's in like my dorm room basketball court, I'm taking shots somewhere every day. And that doesn't not lead to results. You see it eventually. But no, I definitely agree with you that her strides offensively have been massive. But I think the best part about it is that she's still, like, she's pass first, but in a different way now.
Yes.
Like originally, she was pass first, point blank, period. But now she's pass first in the sense of, oh, I'll look for the option. But now I'm the second option, and I know that I'm the second option. And that's been really fun to see because you've seen that switch almost like, you almost like visually see her make that switch in games.
I think part of it too, and this is a coaching thing, and first of all, I think a big reason also is she feels less pressure now. I think Taylor Stremlo has been unbelievable over the past 3 weeks or so. Like, you weren't here last year, Maddie, but I know you've heard me ask about it. We've talked about it. Like, Taylor Stremlo was so deer in headlights last year on the perimeter. She'd get the ball. I'm not kidding. Nobody would be within 8 feet of her. They would challenge her to shoot, and she just didn't know what to do. Taylor Stremlo now is, like, taking care of the basketball. She's pulling up from three with a hand in her face, and she's finishing 82% around the rim this season. It's incredible the jump that she's made. And where I'm going with that in regards to Chit Chat Wright is Chit Chat Wright was the pure point guard earlier this season. Like, that was her role. Now I know you see it too. They're almost splitting her between the one guard and the off guard, because we're seeing Taylor Stremlo initiate the offense now. So there's a lot of interchangeability now where, one, it takes pressure off Chit Chat Wright. Two, they can run more sets for her. Three, Taylor Stremlo wants to be a little bit flashy. Like, let's keep it real. She's the energizer bunny. She's the, I would say it's nearing emotional leader territory. Ava Hyens probably approaching that as well, as we've seen throughout her last 2 weeks or so. She's really kind of gotten that killer mentality. It's been really fun to see. But Chit Chat Wright being able to play the off guard too has been a very nice development, because people need to realize it's really hard to play the off guard at 5'4". Yeah. It's just not something you see in women's, like, it's just not something you see very often. So for their play style to work like that, and again, I think that little high-low action helps open up the perimeter for Chit Chat, to where she's just she gets to her spot. If Hannah gets, she passes out. If Journey Houston does the same thing. But the interchangeability between Stremlo and Wright is something that I didn't think it was going to be a possibility earlier this year, but they've found a way to make it work. And that's a credit to both of them.
Well, and it also has opened up more offensive options. They're not relying on one player anymore. Yeah. And granted, Iowa never was really relying on one player throughout this season to begin with offensively, but it feels like it's opened up so many more options. And it almost kind of, it's almost surprising, I guess, that there's only, you know, three players really averaging double figures and throughout this season, because you look at the number of times different players have hit double figures in a game and you'd think it would be more. But yeah, it's so interesting. Let's go back a little bit more towards the tournament route. I'm pulling up the bracket again. I was either going to face Wisconsin, Illinois, or Michigan State in this quarterfinal round, just based off of how this goes. At the time of this recording, I'm prefacing that with this.
Yeah.
At 4:55 p.m. on Wednesday, March 4th, it's still those three options. Let's make that very, very clear. Iowa's beaten all three of these teams in the regular season, some closer than others. I guess, David, if you could pick the matchup for this quarterfinal, what would you say is going to be the biggest challenge? And who do you think is maybe the most favorable matchup for Iowa?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be Wisconsin, for sure. Wisconsin's the most favorable matchup that Iowa might ask for anybody in the entire country. Half of Iowa's team was not born by the last time that Wisconsin beat Iowa. Like, Iowa has beaten them 32 straight times, which is ridiculous.
But you got to offer the question, so.
No, I get it. Here's your other stat that's funny about that. I'll just take a dig at Wisconsin. I'm a Packer fan, so it's fine. I can take a dig at Wisconsin. In the last 9 games against Wisconsin, Iowa has won by at least 15 points. Like, they're blowing them out year in, year out. So I did a show with Hannah Stolke's mom and Jack Lito from KCRG earlier this week, and I was posed the same question. Both of them wanted Illinois again, because they think they would crounce Illinois. And now look, Illinois was red hot when Iowa played them. Like, they made 9 straight threes, and they weren't even open shots. Everything they threw at the rim, which was somehow going in, right? Iowa, it's amazing they found a way to win that game. I actually would love to see Michigan State again. I think Michigan State is a dangerous 7 seed in this tournament. I think they're a really good basketball team, but a lot of people, I think, expected a little bit more of them this season, and they haven't accomplished that. So I think you want to play a team like that come tournament time. And I love that Illinois center, that Parchment. She is going to be a problem for the Big Ten for the next 3 years. She's terrific. Shauna Green is a really, really good coach. They have a lot of young talent on that Illinois team as well. Again, I think Iowa can beat all three of them. I don't want to say with relative ease, but tournaments, anything can happen, as we've already seen at the time of this recording. Yes. I would rather Iowa play. If you were talking about a favorable path for getting there, I'd rather them play Michigan State. Not that they don't want to see Illinois, but based on how close that game was and some of the players that were going off in that game, I say you just avoid it, because it was such an emotional win for Iowa at that time too. Like, I just don't think you want to see them that quickly after that story of emotion.
Well, and that's something too, is that both Wisconsin and Illinois were very recent games for Iowa, whereas the Michigan State game against Iowa was a little while ago. That game was ranked in the regular season. It also would technically be a ranked matchup if it was to be the eventual matchup on Friday. Michigan State was the number 18 team in this week's AP poll. Iowa still hanging on to that number 9 spot in the ranking. So still inside the top 10. I think I gotta almost lean towards what Jack was saying and what Hannah Sophie's mom was saying. I think I'm almost leaning towards the Illinois game, despite the fact that it has been a really recent matchup, just because of the fact that it was a little emotional. I think I'm almost going to play devil's advocate a little bit. I think the Michigan State Iowa game would be a ton of fun. Don't get me wrong. I think that would be a really good matchup and great for any basketball fan to watch, really. But I think Iowa wouldn't mind another crack at the Fighting Illini, just because of how much emotion was tied into it. And the fact that Iowa was able to win, despite the fact that Illinois was making every single three that they were throwing. They could have like thrown it without even looking, and it went in at one point. It was insane how well they were shooting from the 3-point line. But I almost kind of would say, like, maybe this is just my personal opinion. Sure. I guess I wouldn't hate another matchup against Illinois for Iowa, just because the emotions of like senior day and like all of these other things that were going on, that would calm down a little bit more. And I think that would bode really, really nicely for the Hawkeyes. Well, but we'll see. What do I know? I always joke this time.
I love the March. You understand. Iowa and Illinois hate each other basketball. Oh, yeah. Too. So, like, from a rivalry perspective, like, it would be a lot of fun. But the other idea that I kind of, well, you look at Iowa's path. I mean, Iowa does not have an easy path, because
no,
it was so impressive what they did against Michigan. But I need to reiterate, Michigan is really, really, really good. And I think most Iowa fans are knowledgeable enough to understand that. But Iowa holding them to 44 is ridiculous.
That doesn't just happen.
42 points under their season average. And they are a high-flying, pressure-reeled defense. Now, Ava Hyen, I'm sure, would love to see that matchup again with how much she was kind of fired up. But playing a four-guard lineup is incredibly dangerous. And I think Hannah Stolke was really good defensively in that game. But you think about playing Michigan State, then you play Michigan, and then you have to play UCLA in a three-day span. Yikes. I mean, that's a tough draw for anybody.
No, it is a very tough. That's an extremely tough draw. And again, I think that's where almost the question of the youth on this team and what we all thought the ceiling was at the beginning of this year for this team, that's exceeded the expectation at this point, or what we all thought was going to happen. But that was the regular season. I think tournaments are always a little bit different, which is why I always make the joke of come March, I feel like I know what I'm talking about, but by the time we get to March 1st, I pretend that I don't know anything, because the reality is tournaments are crazy. Nobody knows what's going to happen in any given tournament.
Nebraska. Like, I mean,
exactly.
That's not something look, Indiana turned it around later, but with how garbage Indiana was for the first 60% of the Big Ten season. Now look, Shea, their leading scorer is fantastic, but like, I don't know if you said this on air, but they only played 6 players.
Yeah.
Able to knock off Nebraska. By the way, probably ending Nebraska's NCAA tournament hopes. There's a reason why it's March Madness. You're exactly right. And Iowa, I think, has done a really good job from this standpoint. What's the most disappointing loss Iowa's had this year? I mean, Minnesota, but Minnesota.
I would say Minnesota.
But they're a projected top 4 seed now in the NCAA tournament. I know some people will probably say Iowa State, but that was before Iowa even knew who it was.
Yeah.
At that time, like, so I want to say give them a pass, quite frankly. And then you lose to UConn.
Argument. Yeah, you can make the argument. You could make the USC argument, but I would also throw out that that was the weekend where that was the first game after the McCabe injury. So I was figuring everything and out. USC, the road trip.
Five straight after that.
Yeah. There's not necessarily a quote unquote, like, genuinely damaging loss.
Yeah.
When you look at it, because you can understand what's going on or see the bigger picture. Now, granted, I will say this, we feel that way because we've seen the bigger picture.
Correct.
Too. Like, it's understandable in the moment during that 3-game skid that Iowa had, where they did lose to USC, UCLA, and Minnesota, where everyone was nervous. There was a little bit of nerves going around. But then you take the step back, you look at the bigger picture, and you're like, okay, wait. It, again, it goes back to the resume that Iowa's built this year, too. Which I think we've said that before. You don't wind up being a projected two seed in the NCAA tournament on a whim. So
I know I've said this already, and I need to continue to see what happens or what developments make in the other conference tournaments. But I'm pretty certain Iowa's gonna be a two seed. Like, even if they go, 3-0 this weekend, they win the Big Ten championship. They're not going to leapfrog UCLA. You can't do it just based on the totality of the resume. Like, UCLA can lose the opening game, and they're going to be a one seed. UConn's not losing. Okay, UConn plays in a really bad conference. Texas is really good. I don't know if they've locked up a one, but they're pretty close to locking up that one. Vanderbilt would be the only wild card, but if Vanderbilt loses, they're losing either Texas or South Carolina. So, and if that happens, South Carolina goes to a one. So, right. I think Iowa, for the most part, again, I don't want to say settles a two seed, but again, you backtrack to earlier this year. I think Jeff Linder picked Iowa to win like 21 games preseason.
I believe that's right.
I was somewhere around 21 myself. I thought this is a team that was slightly better than last year or very similar to last year, but had a slightly higher ceiling. We've gone from that to, look, Iowa is going to be picked by a lot of people to make an Elite Eight. And depending on the matchup they'll have against the one, pending Hannah Stolke's health, you're going to have a couple national people pick Iowa to go back to the Final Four, which sounds insane in the big picture. But then you look at the resume and you look at the personnel. I get it.
Yeah.
It's a credit to everybody involved in the program.
Yeah, it is. And I know we've kind of danced around it, and we started the podcast talking about Hannah, but we'll go back to this too. You talk about Iowa's path to a Big Ten title, just specifically this weekend, and, potentially playing Illinois or Michigan State or Wisconsin without Hannah Stolke, more likely than not. Then you look at Saturday, assuming Michigan wins that game, you're getting a rematch against Michigan, potentially without Hannah Stolke. We don't know yet. And then you might say Iowa beats Michigan, then they go to play UCLA. I'm assuming UCLA, again, just heads over to the Big Ten title game. You're potentially playing that game without Hannah Stolke either, because we don't fully know the extent of how long. She's been listed as day-to-day since the Wisconsin game.
Yep.
And so when you say day-to-day, you have to assume naturally until we hear otherwise. And so for right now, that could be Friday, that could be the entire Big Ten tournament, but that certainly adds a wrinkle
to it. Here's what's a game changer for the women's game, and this is where the women's game does it right compared to the men. They give the players rest after the championship. Like, I think Iowa's off for 2 weeks, and that's why it's like a lot of people make the argument on the men's side of things, like, why would they want to go win the Big Ten championship? Because then they could have to play on Tuesday or Wednesday. And that was right after they played 3 games or 4 games in 4 days. If you want to be encouraged about Hannah Stolke's injury from that standpoint, I totally get it. And if she wants to, if Iowa makes it to Sunday and she hasn't played and she wants to have a go at it against UCLA, you're going to feel a lot better about doing that, knowing that she could have 2 weeks to rest at that
point. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of that is we really don't know the full extent at this point. So it's going to be very much, and I don't even think Iowa truly knows the full extent at this point. They didn't practice today. Jan said Hannah hasn't practiced recently. They were going to do one more practice in Iowa City before heading on to Indianapolis for the game Friday. So there's an opportunity to see how it feels. But obviously we're not going to know for certain until the availability reports come out. All right, David, final question for you. I feel like we've kind of danced around it. You may have said it point blank at this point, but I like asking it regardless. What's the one thing Iowa needs to do to potentially win a Big Ten title?
Offensive consistency. I think there are times where Iowa looks so dominant on offense that high-low action works. You let Ava Hyen take over in the second halves. What I mean by offensive efficiency, it's not solely just making baskets. Iowa cannot turn the ball over 19 to 20 times in this environment. We've seen them. I think they've done a much better job of breaking the press this year than they had earlier in the year. Hannah Stolke's dribbling has been a big part of that. So that kind of worries me a little bit if she's not available. But there's a lot of teams I feel like are going to play incredible pressure-filled defense. They are going to be on the ball. They are going to be playing defense all 94 feet. Iowa has to get the ball across the midline, stay composed. And there have been times where they get, you know, they're on the perimeter, but they completely give away where they're throwing the ball. They kind of hold it up here and they wait and they wait and they wait for to get position. Defenses just collapse in, and we've seen them, you know, have strands of four turnovers in 2.5 minutes. You're not going to win a lot of games like that. I think Iowa's defense is going to show up. I think you have Kylie Fierbach, who's the best one-on-one perimeter defender in the Big Ten Conference. I don't care what her stats say. I'm happy they finally got that right because she was robbed last year. Offensive efficiency and trusting and kind of rallying off what I'm going to call, it's going to be a home crowd in Indianapolis. Rally around that. Don't turn the ball over. I think Iowa's going to at least have a chance to get back, at least in the finals, to play UCLA. And after that, who knows?
It'll be time to see what the selection committee decides for March Madness, which I still can't believe we're already talking about postseason basketball. I mean, like, it feels like football season just wrapped up and we're in early March talking about,
we'll be in spring ball too by the time the tournament
needs, by the time we're done with this
too. And it's like, all right, well, let's do it.
We're closing in on my first full athletic calendar here covering Iowa athletics, and it's mind-blowing that we're almost there at this point. But it's been fun, I'll say that much. David, thank you so much for joining. This has been always a pleasure talking with you and talking shop, but I appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes, and if you guys like this content, there's a new podcast every single week called Hawk Off the Press. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. There's also a newsletter that is completely free. You can sign up at thegazette.com. The exact same name, Hawk Off the Press, that shows up in your inbox every Friday morning. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we will see you next time.
Travel should be simple. With Gazette Travel, every detail is handled. You just show up and enjoy with fellow Iowans. View available trips at thegazette.com/travel.